Good morning. We are. I'm calling to order the House Early Childhood Finance and Policy Division. We'll start by having the clerk take the roll.
Representative Pinto, Chair.
Present.
Representative Katizawatun, Vice Chair.
Present.
Representative Franson. Representative Bonner.
Present.
Representative Damath.
Present.
Representative Heintzman.
I'm here.
Representative Morrison.
Present.
Representative Pryor. Representative Wasilek.
Present.
Representative West, excused.
Okay, members, we do have a quorum. We need to deal with some minutes. If I can have a motion to approve the minutes of the February 19th meeting.
So moved.
Thank you. Representative Morrison moves approval of those minutes. Any additions or corrections? And hearing none, all in favor of approval of the February 19th minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Okay, that's done. And the minutes of our February 28th meeting, if I can have a motion to approve those.
So moved.
Representative Bonner moves approval of February 28th minutes. Any additions or corrections? Hearing none, all in favor of approval of those minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Nothing. And then finally, the minutes of our March 1st joint meeting with the Jobs and Economic Development Finance Division, if I can have a motion to approve those minutes.
So moved.
And that was Representative Katizawatun. Any additions or corrections to those minutes? Then all in favor of approval of the March 1st minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Okay. Thanks, members. So, members, today we're going to be hearing six bills that relate to licensing and regulation of child care. We're going to be hearing some more of these bills in the future. So we'll kind of walk through these. Talk a little more at the end of the hearing about what's going to be coming up in the next few weeks. But we'll get going. I believe the Representative Olson is here, and this is the first bill, House File 1841. She's on her way up. And as she comes, if we can have a motion from someone on the committee to put House File 1841 before us. Representative Pryor is doing so.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm so moved.
Thank you. House File 1841 is before us. And members, the plan for all six of these is to lay them over for possible inclusion in our division report to the Health and Human Services Finance Division. And so, Representative Olson, if you can please describe your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 1841 was a bill brought to me by a group of mothers in my district who were concerned about the child care centers that their children attended that they weren't able to use water bottles. And so this was a bill that was born out of that. I do want to note, and so this bill would make changes to be able to allow child care centers for parents to both bring water bottles in for their children and to be able to set some standards for how those water bottles would be handled. One thing that I did want to note that the Association of Child Care Professionals did note that because of the way the bill was drafted, we captured the home daycare centers, which was not the intention of the bill. So I would like to, as this gets laid over, to continue to work to make this better and really keep with the spirit of how this was brought forward. So I did want to just note that. And with that, I would actually just like to turn it over to my testifier to share more about the bill, and I would stand for questions.
And Representative Olson, before we move to your testifier, maybe we'll, as I understand it, you were hoping to have an oral amendment to address that issue that you just referenced. Is that right? Can you explain that?
Mr. Chair, I would be happy to do that, or I would be happy to work on this more as the bill gets laid over, whichever you'd prefer.
I guess in that case we can do the latter. We'll move to your testifier then.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
But please introduce yourself for the record, and then please begin.
Okay, good morning. My name is Chelsea Nelson Preble, and I live with my family in Duluth, Minnesota. I have a 4-year-old daughter, Mara, and a 1.5-year-old son, Jonas. And when Jonas, at his child care center, moved from the infant room to the toddler room when he was about 14 months old, when he had his water bottle in the classroom there and his breast milk bottles, when he got to the toddler room, was no longer able to have a water bottle and instead was provided a small Dixie cup with water in it. And as a 14-month-old, really struggled to drink water from this cup, spilled it all over himself. So not only was a lot of change of clothes, but when we would pick him up at the end of the day, he would get into the vehicle and sign water And we'd have our water bottle for him to drink as much as he needed. And so it was something we really struggled with, him not only moving to a new room, but then not being able to regulate his own body when it came to his thirst. And then my daughter attends a preschool, and we chose this preschool for her because she gets to go out into the community. She takes the city bus to go to swim lessons. They hike in the creeks. They go all over the city of Duluth, which is wonderful. But this winter, when the licensor came through, saw that there were water bottles in the classroom and dinged them for that. And this is an age where 3 to 6-year-olds are learning about personal responsibility and having their backpacks and their water bottles to go around the city and regulate their bodies when it comes to their needs. And so this is something that was a concern to not only the teachers, but to other parents. And so I was like, how do we make sure that they're hydrated when they're out on the trails and doing these kinds of things? So that's why I brought this forward. Good. And some other mothers too.
Thank you. Thank you. Representative Olson, any other testifiers that you have?
No, Mr. Chair. And I would also note, too, that when bringing this bill forward, there were folks talking about the just environmental concerns and the impacts of reusable water bottles versus being able to, as the testifier noted, when their kids are out in the community going to the beach or whatnot, to be able to bring a reusable water bottle. So that's also a part of this worth mentioning.
Okay. Thank you. We have a question from Representative Cutisa-Batun.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Olson, I'm curious if you are aware of any differences in the statute from child care centers to preschool that you mentioned, and if it's a part of the school district that there's a I'm just a little bit confused, like where the line is drawn, or like how if something is a preschool versus kindergarten, if they're be able to start bringing reusable water bottles.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. I don't know. That's a great question. Obviously, the testifier is, you know, sharing a story of a preschool that was not affiliated with the Duluth Public Schools
private
preschool, and therefore is that the statute change would help that.
Okay. Thank you.
And Representative Heitzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the testifier, you mentioned that your child's care facility was dinged for a violation of some kind. Could you elaborate a little? Was there a fine or a reprimand, or how did that work?
So this,
Ms. Nelson.
Yeah, so the licensor came through in January, and so there's a couple of things that they needed to work on, and one of them was being water bottles being in the classroom. I'm not exactly sure where that landed, so I'm not sure. As far as I know, there hasn't been a financial fine, but the water bottles are no longer allowed in the classrooms.
Sorry. Ms. Nelson, were you done? My apologies.
Yep. No, that's as much as I know about.
Okay. And then Representative Heitzman, if you have anything else.
Oh, that's fine, Mr.
Okay.
Chair.
Okay. Thank you. And Representative Damuth.
Good morning. Thanks, Mr. Chair. You talked about reusable water bottles. That doesn't say that they're reusable in the bill. But my question is, if that's the intent, would they be BPA free, or what would the standards be for those water bottles?
Ms. Nelson or Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I mean, that's a good question, and maybe someone from the department could talk about what that. I mean, we could chat about that. Also, I think as the testifier noted, that it's also the ability of the parent to provide that and make that decision with what the parent would descend in with their child.
Thank you.
Okay. Are there Representative Bonner?
Mr. Chair, Representative. I wanted to circle back to that, and I know you may not have the answer, but I'd love to follow up and get the answer. And as to what the rationale is behind the regulation that does not allow them to have water bottles, I'm not really clear the rationale for that regulation. But if you could speak to that, or perhaps if not, follow up on that, I'd love to know the answer.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's not something I know, but again, we could probably work with the department and figure that out and get that answer to the committee.
Okay. Thank you. Anyone else wish to testify on this bill? I see Ms. Banger coming forward. And if you can please identify yourself for the record, and then please proceed.
My name is Elizabeth Bangard. I'm the owner and director of Here We Grow Early Childhood Center. It's a nature school in Mankato. I'm thankful for this legislation. It's the tip of the iceberg. In answer to some of your questions, public school preschools can have water bottles. They do not and are not bound by Rule 3, which is Rule 9503. They are exempt from that. There's actually a loophole that the department has created where I actually made a video of it. It has 6,000 views because you have to have training to get a variance to use water bottles right now. It's a 10-step process. It's very easy to follow. It's not, actually. You have to get a health consultant to sign off on how you're going to train your staff to use water bottles, all of these ridiculous things, really, how you're going to wash them, how you're going to put the fresh water in every day. And yet we're also expected to use an EpiPen to save a child's life, which I have done a number of times at my center. So are there fines attached to things like this? Yes, there are. I track pretty closely every day when licensing citations are issued. There are centers who have gotten a $100 fine for being short two blocks. There are centers who've gotten fines for having uneven ground. There's 3,000 pages of data that is being ignored right now by quite a few people in the legislature, and it was presented last year in Representative Franzen's committee. It's 3,000 pages long. When you're talking about the child care crisis and the patterns in there, and all of these type of regulations, this is just one. We could write piece after piece of legislation about how many blocks providers have or what kind of fines are attached. What's happening is we're pitting certain groups. Corporate centers, they're free and clear. That's what the data shows. That's what no one wants to talk about. That is the giant elephant in the room, and public schools are exempt from it. Meanwhile, you have parents who deserve choice of what their children should be able to do, and we're being regulated on blocks and water bottles and just ridiculous asinine things like chipped paint. So while I'm in favor of this legislation, I also know it could be a bartering chip and could be gone in the omnibus bill because I know how that works. So
thank you, Ms. Bangert. Anyone else who wishes to testify on the bill? And then seeing no, that's our page, apologies. So seeing none, one more, Representative Cotiza Wutun.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess, Representative Olson, as we continue to go forward and look at this bill, I'm just curious, you know, as it does state that the child care program must wash the water bottles, rinse them, sanitize them daily, and then store them clean and dry. Would it be possible, or would it make more sense potentially to put the onus on the parent and give them the choice of taking the water bottle home on a daily basis when they pick up their child? Or I'm just, we can maybe discuss that as we go forward, but I'm thinking that it might take a little bit more, might make it easier. And I know you already mentioned that we're going to remove home child care providers from that stipulation, which would be beneficial, as Ms. Bangert just mentioned. And then we can just discuss that going forward, but just wanted to share that thought.
Thank you, Representative Cotiza-Wutun. With that, the bill will be laid over for possible inclusion in our division report. And thank you very much, Ms. Nelson, and thank you, Representative Olson. And welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Glad to have you. Is Representative Quam, he is here. I want to have our visitors go first so you can move on to other things. And so if we can have a motion to put House File 740 in front of the committee. Anybody willing to do that? Representative, thank you, Mr. Thank you, Representative Heitzman. Representative Heitzman moves House File 740 to put it in front of the committee. Representative Quam, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And there are a couple of, I think there might be up to three testifiers. And basically, the intent is to continue the build towards teamwork and a partnership between the agency, the department, personnel, the county personnel, et cetera, and the daycare providers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in the past, we've worked together for the fix-it ticket and other efforts. This is to do a little bit of an update. We now have online reference and accessibility to any citations, any information. And there's some data that's printed on the license, which is good for 2 years, but oftentimes phone numbers and other things change. And this is to have us realize we're in the 21st century, and we do have accessibility to all the information on the you know, on the web. And if I could have the first testifier.
Certainly, yeah. Ma'am, please identify yourself for the record, and then please feel free to begin.
My name is Barb Killow. I am a family child care provider in Byron, Minnesota. I've been providing quality child care in my home since 1998. I was presented a National Teaching Award in 2016 by the Terry Lynn Lockoff Foundation. I have previously held a national accreditation and CDA. I have a BA in early childhood development. I'm a trainer, I'm a mentor, and a CDA professional observer. I currently hold a parent aware rating of 4 stars. I am serving on the advocacy committee with FCCI, Family Child Care Incorporated, which is our local child care association. When you look at my license issued by the state, you cannot see the pride, commitment, and effort I put forth facilitating each child's growth towards school readiness. You see a big, bold print, I'm sure you can read it from here, and it states, to report concerns about your child care, contact Olmsted County Licensing at 507-328-6400. This bold print is an advertising technique used by people developing flyers to indicate what is important. My old license in 2004 was the last license I earned that looked professional. That is not a respectful way to convey this information. You can clearly see this statement instead of my name, my license capacity, or the longevity in my career. Parents do need to know where to report abuse. Department of Human Services has developed a form that addresses this in a respectful manner. And you have this in your folder. It's called the Mandated Reporter Form. On this 2-page form, it clearly explains who should report, where to report, and what to report, giving clear definitions of what abuse is. Parents sign a copy that we keep, proving that they have received the information as well as keeping a copy for themselves. Statute even backs this up by mandating that providers always have this form available upon request. In this massive digital age, the information is also available online in multiple areas, including DHS, local licensing, social services websites, just to name a few. In early childhood education, I know how important it is to maintain the safety of children. I also know how important my job is. I'd like my license, after 13 years, to finally depict that. I'd like to see my professional-looking license finally to be displayed on my wall in my home so that I can proudly display all of my hard work that I put forth to the youngest members of our state.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony, and thank you for your work taking care of young kids. Representative Quam, it sounds like you had at least you had one or two other testifiers. You can call up the next one. And if you had a third, that person could even come up as well, maybe sit up there, and then we can.
Mr. Chair, that person I don't recognize. I'm not sure, but I believe is also in the audience.
Okay. Yeah, and feel free to come on up. You can sit at a chair nearby, and then you'll be ready to go when we go. And please identify yourself for the record, and please begin.
Thank you, Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Julie Seidel, and I am the Public Policy Director for the Minnesota Association of Child Care Professionals, and I've also been a licensed child care provider for 17 years. I agree completely with her sentiments about our licenses. One thing I would like to bring up is when you walk into a restaurant, the license isn't posted at the front door with big, bold letters. If you have a problem with the food you ate here tonight, this is who you call and complain. You can get your hair cut. The license for my stylist doesn't say, if you have a complaint about the haircut you received today, this is the phone number that you call. What I find very ironic, and I should have brought it with me, is that I took a look at my license last night, and it clearly states if you have a concern about the care of your children that you're to call Anoka County. Unfortunately, it lists a phone number that was changed over a year and a half ago. So even if the parents were to look at that thinking that's where they needed to call, the phone number is not the county's phone number anymore. So it's really not doing the parents any good by seeing this on the license when the phone numbers are incorrect. And it's widely available online. If a parent has a concern, they can find that information without it being printed, like she said, larger than our name, larger than our capacity. I think those things would be more of a concern for a parent. They would want to see that. Are we within capacity? They walk in sometimes and see 10 kids running around and think, holy cow, Our license should clearly state that where they can see it, and right now you'd have to get out a magnifying glass to see it.
Thank you for your testimony and for your work, Ms. Seidel. And then for the testifier sitting in the middle, if you can identify yourself and please proceed.
Mr. Chair and committee members, my name is Kim Leopold, and I am on the legislative committee of the Association of Minnesota Family Child Care Licensors.
And can I ask you to spell your last name, please?
L-E-I, P as in Paul, O-L-D as in dog.
Thank you so much.
For the most part, so AMFCCL is a group of licensors from around the entire state. We have a board of about 10 right now that represents, like I said, as much of the state as people want to represent. We have conferences every year. We invite all the licensors. We're in contact constantly with DHS and the licensors and Ms. Seidel for sure. We are in support of obviously streamlining things. We don't have an opinion on whether or not the license states anything about, making a complaint. However, the form now that, I don't know if it's required or if it's an interpretation of the law, does have information for the parents to make a complaint, which isn't necessarily child protection. So all of our clients are parents and children. And so, we have concerns with removing the portion of providing parents with those numbers. Again, we don't think it necessarily has to be on the license. Providers and licensors work together to provide safe care for children. Parents are the ones who are in the homes all day. Well, the providers are all day. The parents are there more than any of us ever can be. We just want to make sure that if parents have a concern about the child care home, that first of all, they're obviously talking to the providers about that. Secondly, that they can come to us as licensors and come to some sort of conversation, agreement, things like that. And we want all the children enrolled to be safe and make sure that the parents have a way to not make a complaint, just if they have a concern, if they need to talk to us, that they can do that. So we don't have a problem with it being removed from the license, but want the information to still get to the parents.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony, for sharing. Representative Wazlowick has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My concern was similar. Is there something on? I see there are a few blank spaces on the mandated reporter policy from DHS, and I'm wondering if that might be where those
phone
numbers.
This is just for mandated reporting.
Sure.
This just tells the parents that the providers are mandated reporters, and then obviously gives the phone numbers if they have a child protection concern, which is way larger than, maybe a concern about the child care,
Representative Boswick.
I think my concern would be, I agree with you on the not having to have it huge on the license, but I think that we do have folks who don't necessarily have access to the internet or wouldn't know where to look. Like, what do I search for, or what am I doing? So I think it would be important to at least have something somewhere, like here's a website with this information or something on some sort of form that people are getting, so if they have a concern. And I'm not sure, I'm looking at the bill, and on the back there is something about phone numbers, but I imagine I'm not sure if that piece is staying or not, but I just have a concern.
And Representative Wazlowick, I think that back page, then this should be language that would be deleted under the bill.
So that was just one concern, is that people know, obviously we can look at the internet, but if they're not all in one place, I don't know if DHS has a web page where they have that information centralized so people can find it, but I think it's important to be able to direct people to that in some sort of way so they know where it is.
Is there, before we get representative questions, if the department has an answer to Representative Oslovic's question either now or if we can get that later? Mr. Semple's here, somebody is who can answer that. But if there's not someone who can answer right now, we certainly would want the answer to that question Representative Oslovic is asking. So we'll move to Representative Heitzman in the meantime.
Mr. Chair, this is more a question probably for you and your staff, but if there was a way, I think we heard from the testifier earlier that if you walk into a restaurant, you see the license. You walk into another facility of all sorts, and there's licenses displayed. Is there any way we could determine if that's something that is there in the fine print? To respond to the representative's inquiry, I'm wondering, if it's not required at a restaurant, why would we require that these folks have to have that information available right there on that license? I don't know how to get that question answered because there's so many other departments that might be involved, but it's something to consider, and maybe we can get that information.
Mr. Heitzman, it sounds like the sort of question that we're directing to House Research, I guess, if Mr. Burris is understanding, or Ms. Sunderman is understanding the question, wants to comment on it, Ms. Sunderman.
Yes, Mr. Chair and members. I believe last year there was a bill passed that that removed the requirement to physically post correction orders. They still have to post, providers still have to display their license in their facility. And so that is in statute, I believe. It's possible it's in the rules, but I'm pretty sure it's in statute. Now, the section that's being repealed under this bill specifies that the telephone number has to be printed in bold and large font on the license. That's something, you know, moving forward, that there could be work on if the issue is how big the number is or something like that. So we could do that.
Representative Heintzman, does that start? Is there an additional request you want to make of House Research to find out more of the answer to your question, Representative Heintzman? Or
I appreciate the answer, but I am wondering if, say, for example, when we're talking about a number of different public locations, whether it be restaurants or other such places, are they required to display this kind of information in case of complaints? And if there's so many departments involved, it's going to probably be hard to get an answer. But it'd be nice to know, is this an unusual scenario, or is this normal that this information has to be present in the big block letters, or is it okay that it's in, you know, the same print as you would see in the rest of the license, or does it have to be present at all? Because there's so many other locations for that information to be found. But I understand the representative's comment that it needs to be available somewhere, but maybe this isn't the place to put it if we're not requiring anybody else across other boundaries, so to speak, in terms of locations and businesses and occupations.
Representative Heintzman, I will say I was struck thinking that, yeah, if you walk in a restaurant and there's a big sign that says right up front, if you think the food is bad or you think you've got food poisoning, make sure to call this number and
exactly.
Try it. That's not really encouraging people to go visit that restaurant. So certainly, yeah. That may be something. It sounds like there may be some additional information that we need in terms of how it works in other industries, it sounds like, from what you're asking. So we can, and I'm seeing the staff, House Research staff nodding in terms of attempting to provide some of that information to us. So yeah, let's definitely look at that. Was there anyone else who wished to testify on the bill? To see that and not seeing anyone. And I know, and so it sounds like we want some additional information from the department as well, so make sure that we get that. With that, then I'm inclined to move on to our next bill. Representative Wesselbeck, certainly.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think some important to note that while we certainly can compare kind of restaurants and salons to this, I think it's also important to note that I think that childcare providers are doing more important work that taking care of, not more important, but understand my point about that it's more important than kind of haircut restaurants. So just being clear about that we can compare those two in that way, but I want to be sure that we're not doing that in that way.
Thank you.
Does that make sense?
Thank you, Representative Wozniak. Yeah, and I'm sorry, I should have let the bill's author have the final word. It sounds like he wants to anyway. So, Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And remember, this is licensed daycare providers. There are unlicensed daycare providers that don't have to conform to these, and that was last year or the year before when we got rid of having the citations listed because they're all online, and this is a continuation. But it's about respect to these wonderful women that work so hard.
And men.
And yes, well, I know a few men that
you
are.
Got a thumbs up from Representative Heintzman, Representative Quam, and Ms. Leopold. Please finish, Representative Quam. My apologies.
You notice that this is a thing about respect. This is hard work. It's got a lot of messy things to take care of, but it's rewarding. And so this is just one more step to show respect and try and help keep the daycare providers there and show that we're a team.
And I think that we can all have consensus that you couldn't have a more important work to be done. And then the question is just how we get that done. But it could not be a more important role in society. So thank you all for doing it. Representative Quam, thank you for bringing this bill forward. And we will move on. And then again, I'll lay it over for a possible inclusion in our division report to the HHS Finance Committee. So Representative Wozniak, you are up. with House File 1684. And so Representative Wasilewicz moves House File 1684 to be before us for possible inclusion. And Representative Wasilewicz, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill is pretty, in my mind, pretty simple. The summary, the overview is almost as long as the actual text of the bill. it essentially directs the Commissioner of Human Services to review kind of the licensing and background study statutes and see if there are any sort of duplicative requirements or things that could maybe be streamlined, and then to allow for electronic document submission so that child care providers can submit those sort of documents to DHS electronically and hopefully make that process a little bit easier for folks.
Thank you, Representative Wasilewicz. I'm just checking. I believe, and this bill has a Senate companion that's being authored by Senator Relf, and so sort of moving along in that way. Do you have any testifiers? I don't believe that you do, but just checking. Okay. No. I guess we'll do this. Any public testifiers? Looks like Ms. Leopold is on her way up. So Ms. Leopold, just identify yourself again, and then please begin.
Kim Leopold, Legislative Committee of AMFCCL. We are always in favor of not having duplicative paperwork and things like that. The last line of this is the commissioner shall also establish a process for child care providers electronically submit requested information. The commissioner is also considered the counties because the counties is who hires us. And currently, I think that it's like that, but maybe it's just not shared widely, I guess is my thing. It's there, but it maybe just needs to move along. So that's all I wanted to say.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Leopold. And then Ms. Seidel.
Thank you, Chairman, members of the committee, Julie Seidel with MACCP. And, of course, we are very much in favor of this bill. Child care providers are drowning in paperwork at this time. And in 2018, MACCP sent a survey to nearly 7,000 licensed child care providers that we had email addresses for. We received a response rate of over 2,500 providers. Of those providers, 70.8% said that they had considered quitting in the last 5 years. And of those respondents, 92% of them said it was the overburdensome paperwork and regulations. So this bill would give some great relief to that vast majority of providers that have actually considered closing their doors because of all of the paperwork that we have to take care of. I have a very large file cabinet actually in my dining room, so I have easy access to that information if a licensor shows up. I would really like to have a little zip drive and remove that from my dining room. It would make life a lot easier and a lot more homey than looking like an office dining room. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Seidel. Anyone else from the public wishes to testify? Ms. Bangert, come on up. Then identify yourself as well, and then please begin.
My name is Elizabeth Bangert. Here we grow, Early Childhood Center. I appreciate this bill. I would also, again, not to keep going back to data, but we use data for everything else. There are center providers getting written up for not transposing the date from the background study into a separate portion of the file. And that is just ridiculous. If it's already stored electronically, if it's already in the file, why would I move it from the piece of paper from DHS into a separate portion of the file? It just, again, lots of moving pieces, and this is why we have a child care crisis.
Thank you, Ms. Bangert. Anyone else? Not seeing anyone. Any questions from members at all? And not seeing any. Pardon me, Representative Heitzman. Apologies.
There's always a question.
I think I should assume that. Have the presumption be there'll be a question. And then yes, Representative Heitzman, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm looking and I see this last line, and I think this is part of the, as far as I'm concerned, probably part of the best element to this. The commissioner shall establish on 1.19. Starting a process for child care providers to electronically submit request information to the commissioner. I'm assuming that's to provide some feedback as to how the rules and regulations are affecting them both positively and negatively. Representative, do you have any idea how they're going to provide this information to the providers? I mean, I'm assuming there'd be some kind of a mailing or something of that sort, but it's not going to be hidden. It's just the department's having to make this review, I guess. I'll just get at the heart of what I'm concerned about. And I think it would probably be in the department's best interest to submit lots of positive things as opposed to opening up the floodgates to a lot of negative things. So I'm wondering how they would invite those comments so that people actually knew that they had that opportunity. Do you have any idea or information to that?
Representative Wazlowick, if you know, we're returning the call of the department.
Mr. Chair, Representative Heinzman, I'm not exactly clear on what that process would look like. I imagine that the department in doing this work would want to be in close contact with child care providers to ensure that they're having the feedback on this. And I think the to your point about line 1.9, it's my understanding that the information that's being is anything that DHS may require of child care providers or that's being requested by DHS. So I don't know that it's necessarily tied to this, the communication is necessarily tied to the idea that we're looking at the duplicative regulations but and paperwork, but I think that it's just generally trying to streamline all of that paperwork burden, as a couple of the testifiers alluded to make that a little bit easier for providers to provide the information they're supposed to be providing to DHS.
It sounds sometimes like maybe the two sentences are two different instructions, essentially. So that second sentence is that the commissioner has to establish a process to if there is requested information, then has to allow it electronically. But Representative Heinzman.
So thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to be clear then, this process would be undertaken by the agency to review themselves. It would take in no other information in terms of feedback as to how these rules and regulations are affecting others?
Representative Wazlowick.
Mr. Chair, Representative Heinzman, I don't actually know if that would be a piece of this. It's certainly something that we can talk about with the department. And maybe, I don't know if the department has anything to add to this, but that's certainly something we could think about.
Representative Heinzman,
yes.
Representative Heinzman.
Hopefully there could be some clarification there, because it wouldn't seem to me to be very productive if you're just asking the agency to review whether or not the rules they created are good rules. Hopefully there'd be some opportunity for others to weigh in on that. Seems like we've heard enough testimony today as to how some of those rules are causing some pretty negative interactions. The other thing I was curious about is, do we have any kind of a I'm assuming there's some cost. Is a fiscal note been requested?
Representative Wazlowick.
Mr. Chair, Representative Heinzman, I do not believe it has been requested, no.
Okay, but Mr. Berg.
Mr. Chair, Representative Heinzman, there's not a fiscal note request on this. We could consult with the department further, but in the case of the review, the department just reviews the statutes and then comes to the legislature with a proposal in 2020. In the case of establishing a process to provide for providers to electronically submit, without further refinement of that, you know, sending an email is an electronic process, which I would assume you could do in almost all cases and would not have any appreciable cost. So it kind of would depend on what you meant by that. If it is meant to be just as broad as it is any electronic process, there probably would not be a cost.
Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess as I'm reading it, I'm trying to better understand how this could have a positive impact. I'm assuming we're looking for an outcome here, Representative. So personally, I'm having a really difficult time finding a way to want to support this. It doesn't seem as though it's inviting folks who may have maybe some more insight as to how these rules are impacting, as opposed to the agency just looking at its own rules and saying, well, we think our rules are good or bad. I mean, I'm assuming that they're going to say our rules are good. But maybe there's some amendments that might be considered as we're going forward on this, because it just doesn't seem to have the teeth that maybe would tell the agencies, or the agency specifically, these are things that are detrimental and are hurting the opportunities, and care providers are walking away from their businesses because of this. I don't know if that's going to happen under this language, so hopefully there's something else that comes through the process here.
Okay. I'm going to move on to Representative Franson, unless you got something in particular you want to say, Representative Wazlowick. Okay, well, so Representative Franson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wazlowick, so the department's policing itself, in my opinion, okay? So as Representative Heinzman said, you know, the department that's their job, basically, has been, is just making life more difficult for child care providers, and government coming in, sweeping in, and trying to expand the pre-K, running more providers out, more regulations being driven, driving the providers out of the field. Did you ever consider having the legislative auditor take a look at providing recommendations and reviewing and having an independent outside look into your bill, into maybe just a independent eyes instead of a department that's really just policing itself.
Representative Wasilek.
Mr. Chair, Representative Franson, I personally didn't look into that. I think that is a good idea to have kind of that independent viewpoint coming in. I do think that this is a piece of the process. I don't think this is the only thing we should be doing. Clearly, to Representative Hineson's point, if we're hearing from child care providers about some of these rules and regulations that need to be changed, such as the water bottle rule, I think that it's worth, we can also propose that legislation. I think this is just an opportunity for the department to kind of look over what they have and see if there are any ideas from internally about what they can do. And we can certainly also be proposing our own legislation or adding additional things to whatever might come from them. But I certainly wouldn't say we shouldn't have the OLA look into this as well.
Representative Franson, okay. Okay, so with that, you get the final word, Representative Wasilek. Anything else?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think just, again, we've heard a lot of conversation about regulations and rules that are hurting child care providers, and I think this is obviously not the only thing that we should be doing, but I think it is a good step that we can continue the process of making sure that the regulations we have in place and the rules around paperwork and that sort of thing are streamlined so that we can help our child care providers. Thank you.
Thank you so much. So with that, we'll lay over, I'll lay over House File 1684, possible inclusion. Representative Damuth, you are up. And your bill may address a few of the points that were just raised, in fact. And so Representative Damuth moves House File 1665, putting it in front of us. And Representative Damuth, I think we'll just have you move your author's amendment as well, and we'll address that, and then we can have you describe the bill, et cetera. So Representative Damuth moves, because you do, in fact, you do wish to advance the A1. Is that right, Representative Damuth?
I do, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Okay. And so Representative Damuth moves the A1. Any discussion? It looks like this is just a technical a statutory reference change, Representative Damuth?
Yes, Mr. Chair. That corrects the chapter reference.
Okay. And so any discussion on it? Seeing none, all in favor of adoption of the author's amendment, the A1, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. So the A1 is adopted. Representative Damuth, to your bill as amended.
Mr. Chair and committee, thank you for hearing House File 1665. As I understand is tradition, as a freshman presenting for the first time in a committee, there are treats going around. With your permission.
Okay.
And
yes,
looks like they're already out, so I hope you're okay with that. House File 1665 creates the Office of Ombudsperson for child care providers, providing appointments, requiring reports, appointing money, or appropriating money, and proposing code. This area, it will address the concerns to child care providers relating to the provisions, including licensing, correction orders, penalty assessments, compliant investigations, and other agency interactions. We've heard already in committee this morning, first of all, throughout the entire time in session, the value of child care and our need for it. And it's difficult to hear when we have providers that want to provide the service that is so needed, where it becomes very difficult for them to do. This bill helps to address that by putting that ombudsperson in place to help get the answers needed. I do have a testifier with me this morning, Mr. Chair, if we could turn it over to our testifier.
Certainly. Please identify yourself for the record and then begin.
Yes, thank you. I'm Cindy Cunningham. I'm a family child care provider. I live 2 miles up the street, so I never have as far as anybody else has to come. I am been a provider for 20 years. I'm also the public policy chair for the other family child care provider association in the state, McPenn. And we are a 501c3 statewide association. I'm testifying in support of this bill, which establishes this position. Family child care providers in a constant position of attempting to navigate the disjointed licensing system with no roadmap and no central support. Providers move forward doing their best and frequently wondering if they are doing the right steps. I am one person in the state. Providers can end up calling me if they know me, or if they know someone else who knows me, or if they happen to get connected off of some other electronic mean or other system, or having seen some of my talks. I also have a couple classes on licensing and on licensing visits and Rule 2. So I get frequent calls, I would say at least 3 to 5 a week. So this is something that providers need to know. If a provider is given a correction order and wants reconsideration, there is a very almost private kind of system about how that gets handled. I've worked to try to go with DHS to get those systems known and understood. We just recently got given some information about how to ask for reconsideration, but it still is a very problematic roadmap. If a provider gets a negative action and is shut down, and you can ask for an appeal or you can do this, but there's no one to explain to us in detail really what our legal rights and responsibilities and processes are to this. And critically, there's nothing that's anonymous. There was a piece in a legislative that we've tried to get pushed forward. There was supposed to be a report given to legislators about an anonymous system for providers to be able to get information through DHS, and DHS has repeatedly refused to give us an anonymous system. Everything circles back to our licensors, and so the vulnerability, I would say, along with the, and sometimes I think maybe higher even than the paperwork, but the vulnerability of our positions becomes paramount. We do not have a central place to call. We can call our licensors. We often get circled around to the state. The state has licensing units do have a central number that they can call in. We do not, without, again, it circling around to our licensors. The critical is the establishment and the need of the position is to separate the entity from DHS and the licensing unit. There are other systems established which have been successful. The IRS has an advocacy system. School districts have ombudspersons, who are separate from a superintendent, report to the school boards. So there is not a reporting to the actual licensing unit for accountability. The position needs to be established outside of the political arena, as stated, and focus strictly on assisting providers with information and the support to navigate the licensing challenge. Again, I often say my training is the roads and rules. We often don't know the roads or the road signs, and we just need to continue to have places to go to find that information.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Cunningham. Any other testifiers? Representative Damuth? And Ms. Seidel is on her way up. As she's coming up, Representative Damuth, I'm being advised by House Research that the bill needs to be referred to the Judiciary Committee. So I'm glad that we're hearing it at this point, because that should give enough time to make everything move. And so I guess when we get to that point, just to say, I think this will end up being a motion to move the bill out of our committee and to Judiciary. I would think it would end up back here, I guess, but because of the data practices issue, it's best in subdivision 4, the access to records is what I'm being advised by House Research. So I just want to advise you of that. But Ms. Seidel, if you can identify yourself and please begin.
Julie Seidel with MACCP. We really appreciate this bill. We agree that we need some system here. We just have a couple of concerns. And one of the concerns is we would like to limit the scope to family child care, that this person is directly just for family child care. There is a complete difference between centers and family child care, so they need to know family child care. And also in the hiring restrictions there, if somebody that would have a family child care background, because unless you've been in our position, you really don't understand the things that we have to go through, the complexities. And then also one of our concerns is that we don't want to allow DHS to use this as a way to stop the direct communication with providers. We've went to great lengths, even passing legislation, so that DHS has to communicate things directly to providers, and we just have a concern that they may try and use this person when we make that contact, that, well, you have an ombudsperson now, you need to go back to them. So we just want to make sure that they can't use that as a way of cutting off that communication that we have so desperately gotten at this point.
Ms. Seidel, just a question for you. There's a reference in the bill to family child care providers and legal non-licensed child care providers, and I know you would not want centers to be encompassed by this. Would your organization support having legal non-licensed child care providers encompassed by this?
You know, I guess I never really thought about that, but they fall under some of the same rules that we do. They do not, of course, have all of the rules and regulations we do, right. So
off the top of my head, I'm going to say I don't see a problem with it. You know, if I have a little bit of thought and I have a problem, I would definitely let you know, but I don't think there would be a problem with that.
We should let, and then let Representative Damuth respond as she wishes to your comments. Representative Damuth.
The idea as written in the bill is for the family care providers and then the legal non-licensed. I would entertain any conversation if we need to take a look at that differently, but at this point, as the bill language stands, is what I would, what is my intent.
And Representative Damuth, you might want to consider then tightening it a bit because it says child care providers including those categories, which I think, as I would read that, probably as it's written, would include centers. So it might just need to be, have the language tightened as it moves to the next committee, if that is in fact your intent. Just a suggestion.
Thank you.
Yeah. Anyone else who wishes to testify on the bill? Ms. Bangert?
I'm Kim Leopold.
I'm sorry, Ms. Leopold.
That's all right.
My apologies.
I snuck in.
You sure? I had in my brain. I had in my brain you'd already testified, but that was on the other bill. So yeah, please, Ms. Leopold.
I'm always here.
No, that's fine. Please begin.
My name's Kim Leopold. I'm with the Association of Minnesota Family Child Care Licensors, and we are in support of this. There aren't a lot of clear directions once a provider receives a negative action from the Department of Human Services. We actually are sort of instructed not to talk with them anymore, especially with temporary immediate suspensions, because it usually goes to court and then it gets into, you know, us testifying, us not testifying, and giving legal advice. So I think it would be helpful for providers. I think the difference between licensed and legally non-licensed is that legally non-licensed providers really don't have anything to do with the Department of Human Services. Mm-hmm. It's only regarding child care assistance. They do not have to follow any of the rules of the Department of Human Services. So I agree with Ms. Seidel. I don't think it matters either way if they're in here, but for sure for family child care providers. A couple of the things regarding the letters that were included with this, with the correction order, there is, quote unquote, very clear language on a correction order on how to request reconsideration for that. It's not always easy. I know that in my job, I will tell a provider. I encourage providers to do that because then that forces DHS to actually give a response on a question that a provider may have. I'm never upset if a provider on my caseload requests reconsideration. It's not personal. We are getting an answer from the Department of Human Services because I'm not the one, licensors are not the ones who make those decisions. Again, I think we are in support of this. As of right now, there is nowhere for providers to go to get through this very confusing legal process.
Thank you. We'll move to Ms. Bangert, unless Representative Damuth, you had a comment regarding that at this point. Mm-hmm. Okay, nothing. So Ms. Bangert, please.
Elizabeth Bangert. I wasn't going to testify, but now that we're being removed, possibly, I have a concern as a child care provider. I also get lots of phone calls from people who are trying to interpret all of these different regulations because they are interpreted differently. There's a center who got a citation for mopping the floor and a center who got a citation for not mopping the floor. And out of the 3,000 pages of data, there's only one page that is reconsideration requests that were actually approved. So you can ask for a reconsideration request till you're blue in the face. It won't matter. And you can go to a judge if you have a problem with it, but the administrative law judge doesn't have the final say. It goes back to the department. They then have the final say over a law judge. So I would appreciate an opportunity for us as child care center providers to have someone ask questions of, because I feel like for a long time we've kind of been pit against each other. Child care centers, family providers. But there's an in-between. I'm not a chain child care center. I don't have hundreds of child care centers. I'm one person with 38 kids trying to do all of this, and there's a lot of us out there like that. So we need someone to be able to ask questions of, too.
Okay, thank you. And Representative Damuth, any comment on any of those, anything that was said? So I want to make sure to give you an opportunity.
No, I'll take it under advisement. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And any questions from members? It looked like there was nothing further from public. And so Representative Damuth will give you the final word. Is there anything else that you want to add?
I think it is clear the need for creating the Office of Ombudsperson for our child care providers. Thank you again for hearing House File 1665.
Thank you, Representative Damuth. And so your motion then is to refer House File 1665 to Ways and Means with a recommendation to be referred to Judiciary Committee. Pardon me, HHS Finance, right? Good point. We're going to do that. The recommendation would be referred to Judiciary and Civil Law. And so any final discussion on that motion? Seeing none. So all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Congratulations. Representative Damon.
Thank you.
Your bill has been passed. Yes, and that was as amended. That's been passed on. So thank you. And I'm heading up. And so Representative Pryor, perhaps you can.
Thank you, members, as we made the switch. So I will be presiding now, filling in for Chair Pinto. And we have before us House File 1801. And would you like to move your bill?
I would. Thank you, Madam Chair. I move House File 1801. And as I understand it, I was just advised that it does need to move to government operations. I thought that we'd simply be laying over, but it sounds like GovOps will, in fact, need to hear it, at least to send it that way. So I'll make the motion for it to be re-referred through. I guess it'd be passed and then re-referred to government operations. It'll return to the floor and then go to there.
Okay. Thank you for your motion.
And then, Madam Chair, I do have an author's amendment to put the bill in the form that I would like. And so would ask for support for that. I can certainly provide more context.
All right. And so we will move the author's amendment D1. Where are we on this? Thank you. The chair moves the DE1 amendment. Is there any discussion? And hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right. And so DE1 amendment passes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So members, House File 1801, with the chair's permission, I'll begin describing the bill. House File 1801 was introduced in the Senate, and I was asked to carry the House companion in order to try to address a concern that the rules that govern child care are considerably out of date at this point. And the proposal in the bill as drafted was to, in fact, put a number of those rules into Minnesota statutes. I have concern with taking exactly that approach of putting rules and codifying them in statute. But on the other hand, there is quite a clear need to modernize the regulations governing child care. The DE1 amendment, and so House File 1801 as amended, reflects an attempt to undertake that modernization. And so that is the purpose. I know there's at least one testifier who's interested in speaking to the bill. I think she has some concerns with the amendment, but at least I suspect supports the general thrust. So with that, I'll, Madam Chair, with your permission, I'll have Ms. Seidel speak.
Thank you. And testifier, could you please identify yourself for the record?
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. I'm Julie Seidel, Public Policy Director for the Minnesota Association of Child Care Professionals.
We have great concerns with the amendment that would give DHS the authority to unilaterally rewrite the rule or make changes to the method of oversight of family child care providers. This is exactly what this amendment would do and precisely why we need House File 1801 without the amendment to prevent them from controlling the process. The fact that they already have a plan that they did not develop with providers, they did not develop with parents, demonstrates once again their unwillingness to work with providers in a meaningful way, especially considering they assured us that they wouldn't be bringing a proposal like this forward this year, but rather stated that this was one of many ideas they were considering down the road in 2020-2021. With broken trust, a lack of communication, and a lack of transparency, there are significant barriers to completing a task such as this without an independent entity mediating the process. This bill, House File 1801, is introduced, adds the necessary transparency and due process, enforces DHS to work with providers and parents, and puts the final decision in the hands of lawmakers who are independent from both providers and the Department of Human Services, ensuring that the fairest changes are made. We encourage the department to support House File 1801 as introduced, and once again extend an invitation to work with the provider community to make the necessary changes to stop the continued loss of 1 to 2 family child care providers per day in the state of Minnesota. All we are asking for is fairness and transparency, and in that vein, we ask that you support 1801 as introduced without the amendment. One thing I do want to state here is that since 2014, we lost well over 2,000 providers. This has been going on since 2011, and we have not slowed down. This is one of the things, this is part of the reason that we're losing providers, is because we have given DHS the authority to be judge, jury, and prosecutor. They have too much authority. There is nobody there to stop when they do things that are not appropriate for family child care, and that is the reason that we believe 1801, the way it was written, it will give somebody else the authority to put their hand up and to say, stop, this isn't right. Providers don't have that authority. We can say it. We say it repeatedly. DHS does not listen. So we just have a lot of concerns with this amendment going through. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there other anyone else that wishes to testify? Please identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony.
Elizabeth Bangert. I'm a child care center owner, and I would agree with what Ms. Seidel just said. The Department of Human Services has way too much power, and this amendment gives the power back to them to structure things. What this is based off of, this risk and weighted model, is what other states do, where if you get a citation, they categorize it, and they'll put a risk level of sometimes 1 to 4. Colorado has it. There's other states that have it. All that does is make us look like worse providers than we already are. We're already dealing with that when people go and look up our records and our sanctions online for things that they don't understand until they open it. It can look like there's 20 citations, and then when you open it, they're the most ridiculous citations ever. Giving more power to the Department of Human Services to do this is not what is necessary and will just further drive the child care crisis. And I'm always interested to know what the other stakeholders means. What is an other stakeholder? Are we talking about groups like Close Gaps by Five and Miniminds and people who are backed by lobbyists? Because if you look at campaign finance data, that's really who's running the show. And little guys like us have no chance, because I don't have hundreds of thousands of dollars to spend to defend my business by people who are bought at this table, and I'm tired of it.
And please identify yourself for the record.
Cindy Cunningham, family child care provider, public policy for McPenn. I had not read this till right now. I am in agreement that this should not be included on the original bill. We have had multiple times, I have had bills introduced to have the ALJ have the final say for negative actions. It can't go anywhere because the powers that don't want it to go forward. DHS wants the final answer. The correction orders are not always correct, and even the results or the determinations on the correction orders. There was a provider in Hennepin County who was dinged and had a correction order for not having magnetic locks, which are not required. DHS legal agreed with it, and it was wrong. We had to get a, there were legislators who stepped in for the provider. We don't need any more direction and power and decision-making by DHS. We need it brought into the public. And there might be a couple of things in here that might be helpful, but overall this amendment is not helpful to the bill as it was originally presented.
And any other testifiers from the public? Thank you. Questions from members? Representative Franson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chair Pinto, so expedited rulemaking, that kind of shoves the public out. The department gets to make the rules without public input. And to me, that is very concerning. We've heard for so many years now that DHS is a major problem to these small businesses, okay? Name me one industry here in the state of Minnesota that is facing a crisis, that is here at the Capitol every day saying, stop trying to run me out of business. It is these small, independently owned businesses, primarily run by women, okay? If this was, if these were businesses that were primarily run by men, I highly doubt that there would be having a problem. But apparently government thinks that they can just run all over the women and get rid of their businesses. Do you think truly that DHS has the best interest at heart in wanting these small businesses to thrive? And do you really want DHS to use the expedited rule process to rewrite these rules and statutes right here?
Madam Chair,
Representative Pinto.
Thank you. Well, I do want to clarify a couple things as I'm responding to you, Representative Franson, and to the comments of the testifiers. As I read House File 1801 as originally drafted, there's no public input at all. There's no input, and what there is it's simply you've got the nonpartisan staff working with the department to simply recodify and statute the rules. So it's not addressing the concerns that are raised as I read this. I have a concern about having rules put in statute because it takes away a lot of the flexibility so that when a provider comes forward and says, hey, I got a problem with the rule, you can address that. And I understand the concerns about the rulemakers. Let's get into that. But as folks see, making a statutory change is really challenging to do. And so all that this says is that without any input from anybody else except for this nonpartisan just reviser staff, the rules are going to be put into place in statute. I have concerns about that. Versus in the amendment, there is the talk, there is the input from parents, child care providers, and other stakeholders. And I do just want to say, and I'm circling back to respond to you, Representative Franson, but I just want to make sure to address the points raised by the testifiers. That's really helpful information, and I take it to heart. And so, in looking at this, it seems to me that there's certainly improvements that can be made to the delete all, and so I certainly want to be talking with folks about it. I just don't feel that the original draft addresses the concerns that are raised, because it's simply taking, as it's written, it's taking rules and just sticking them in statute. So rules that haven't been addressed in decades and then sticking them in statute by the department, which there's so much suspicion of. So with this, at least there's a requirement of input. There's boundaries put and requirements about what needs to be addressed, et cetera. So anyway, that'd be my, I just want to make sure that we're understanding and looking at the bill and the amendment in that correct way.
Representative Franson, follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So on the original bill, on line 1.8, prepare legislation for the 2020 legislation session to repeal and enact statutes. So that would mean to me that there would be a bill coming forward where there could be public input on the pros and cons of such legislation. You know, last session, while on the floor, I introduced an amendment that would remove the rulemaking ability from DHS and bring it back to the legislature, and that was put into the omnibus bill. If you recall, that's one of the items that the governor at the time, Governor Dayton, wanted removed from the final package, because we had left that wording in and the bill was vetoed not just because of that issue, but many of the issues the governor wanted out did not come out. So this is something that the providers are really tired of, Department of Human Services enacting rules without public input, and I would highly recommend engaging in meaningful conversations with the providers regarding your bill, and hopefully if it's not pulled, that you meet with them and take into consideration and redo the bill.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Ransom. Madam Chair, I want to have that input, and certainly as in the way that Elite All is written. As I read the original bill, it says repeal and enact and recodify, and it seems to me there's not actually the discretion to make changes. There certainly would be in the legislative process when the legislation is proposed. That would be true in the Delete All as well. If there's legislation that comes out and then there's a process. But up until that point, under House File 1801, it's just repeal, enact, and recodify, and take the rules and stick the exact same rules we have and stick them in statute, so they're even less flexible. But I would love to interact with and get further input to make sure that the system actually works. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Franson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Chair, that is dependent on the legislature acting on that legislation on the original bill. So it has to come back to the legislature. It's not just recodifying. You're actually having to vote on it.
Chair Pinto.
And Madam Chair, I'll just point out that that's true in the Delete All as well. So either way, it's there's legislation being proposed, and then we have the input in the process.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Pinto, I'm looking and I see that there is I'm always asking about the money. Have you requested a fiscal note? Line 1.19.
Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Heintzman, I'm looking at Mr. Berg, and I don't believe that. And certainly not in the amended version, I suppose. So, Mr. Berg.
Madam Chair, Representative Heintzman, there is not yet a request. There obviously would need to be one on the amendment. It's not in yet.
Okay. Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Pinto, I think I understand what you're trying to communicate. You looked at the original bill and you felt that there wasn't maybe I should just let you explain it. Why are we moving away from 1801 to the DE? What are you trying to do here?
Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Representative Heintzman, the DE1, as I read it, says take the rules, stick them in statute. I have two problems with that. One is that assumes the rules are good in the first place. I'm hearing that they're not. And number two, I'm not a big fan of taking the flexibility of rules and sticking them in statute, but then they can't be changed. I can imagine there's some places where that makes sense, but you want that flexibility. But at the very least, we shouldn't just be taking the rules as written and just dropping them in statute. It seems to me it makes more sense to make sure that the rules are actually working effectively. And I can definitely see and really appreciate the testimony of folks to improve the language of the DE1, but I have a real problem with just sticking rules in statute.
Representative Banner. More follow-up? Representative Heintzman.
Yes, thank you for the follow-up, Madam Chair. Representative Pinto. So I hear that. I hear you saying that. But testifier after testifier who's actually in this business is saying they absolutely hate this DE, and they're going through it, and they see a lot of problems here. And on one hand, I also understand what you're saying, that you don't want to just take rules and drop them into statute. But you and I both know that process happens here, and there's public testimony and opportunity to really make a lot of adjustments. And to me, that creates a lot of question marks in my mind. Why is it in your mind that this isn't the concern that was brought up today by the folks that were testifying? This may not, that may be their only opportunity for quite a while under expedited rulemaking.
Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To confirm, there's legislation coming out on both sides, right? The Delete All does, in fact, have legislation in terms of these new licensing models, et cetera. And absolutely, the input is really welcome and is important. We want to make sure that the system works, and we want to make sure that we have rules and that we have the regulations modernized. My understanding is that it's been several decades since they've been addressed. So it sounds like there's somebody who wants to make a comment on this, Madam Chair.
And thank you. And would you please identify yourself again for the record?
Yes,
thank you.
Madam Chair, committee members. Cindy Cunningham, family child care provider, McPinn, public policy chair. I just want to make a comment, and you just hit on it at that point, was the rules for licensing have been locked for 20 years. There is no flexibility in there unless it is put forth by DHS. So DHS maintains a control of that, and we do not get any public voice or process with this. And my testifying and discussing on whether it's the amendment or the first one, I guess I'm trying to stick to just this, but there is no flexibility in rule for providers. It is only for DHS, and it's not been done. There hasn't been anything done.
Thank you. Representative Pinto, any more comments?
No, I guess, no, I'll more. Leave that. We yeah, we'll soon move on.
Question
yeah.
from Representative Bonner was next. On still this question? Yes, please identify yourself again. Thank you.
Julie Seidel. One of the reasons that we want to codify rule into statute is to take that authority away from DHS to make unilateral changes. There's a lot of the talk from DHS that they have stakeholder meetings. They're reaching out to providers, and I made the comment to one of the head of DHS that I think that their definition of provider involvement and provider's definition are completely different. Their definition is to come out and do a PowerPoint presentation and say, this is what we're going to do, this is what we're thinking. We give input and then turn around and hear there's legislation. Nowhere did they say this is proposed legislation we're going to bring forward. Is there any way we can do this to make it, you know, less harmful for childcare, you know, make things streamlined? They never take our input into this process. They already have their mind set. So we want to take that rulemaking authority away from DHS so that we have a right to sit here and talk to lawmakers and tell them the positives or the negatives and how it's going to affect family child care. This authority is what is destroying family child care in the state of Minnesota. This is why we have the shortage of child care. If we continue to give them more authority and to leave it wide open, you will devastate child care in the state of Minnesota. Thank you.
I think now we'll move on to you, Representative Bonner.
Madam Chair, Chair Pinto. So just a kind of a quick comment, and I think some of what I was actually going to ask may have been covered, but I just want to clarify it. For those of you in the room who do not know, I am an Agile practitioner, an Agile coach. I coach teams for a living. And one of the biggest parts of developing those teams and developing our product is really that constant ability to have feedback from the users who are most impacted by what we're developing. And I want to ask you, Chair Pinto, so as I understand it, what we're actually doing here, and to the concerns of the folks who've been testifying today, I think most of us in this room actually agree with you that we certainly need to make some improvements and take more user feedback into consideration. And if I understand, Chair Pinto, what this amendment is actually doing is actually not just simply taking the DHS's word for it, more or less, that those rules are good and true, but actually allowing for a feedback loop so that childcare providers, parents, and daycare centers can actually have a place at the table to influence how these rules are applied, what they look like, and really give the ability to not only modernize these rules and regulations, but try to find ways to improve them. And I feel like that seems to be the intent, but can you just clarify if that assumption is accurate?
Representative Pinto.
Madam Chair, I think that in general it is Representative Bonner, and thank you for characterizing it that way. And I do have a question, Madam Chair, for House Research, just to clarify the direction, the sending this to government operations, because it's clear that I mean, again, I appreciate the input, and it's clear that some additional changes will be needed as things go through the process. So if we could just get a clarification as to the need for it to go to another committee versus being laid over in this one.
Mr. Burns.
Madam Chair and members, what prompts some consideration of whether the committee might want to re-refer this to government operations regards the lines, the language on lines 1.15 and 1.16 and 1.17, which seems to provide a expedited rulemaking authority process. It's likely that the body would view a House rule as applying on mandatory re-referral of bills. That ultimately is a decision of the body, but is worth noting that because of that House rule and the expedited rulemaking authority, a stop in government operations is worth considering.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Burris. And I suppose that does make sense then, that if it has to do with rules, then the committee would need to see that. Thank you.
Representative Ferenson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Chair, would you happen to just consider laying this table or laying the bill on the table to revisit and revise the expedited rulemaking before we send it off to the next committee? Hearing the testimony, this is just what we're hearing here. You wait till there's social media posts and you're being inundated with emails and phone calls from providers all across the state. So would you be willing to entertain that?
Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Franson. My concern, Representative Franson, is just I do think we need some version of this to pass through. What we don't want to do is not provide the direction that rules be modernized and that they work better. And so my concern with laying it over is then if, in fact, government operations does need to hear some version of this, then I get worried because I really have concerns. I'm happy to talk to folks offline as well about simply putting rules in statute. It seems to me that's not a good practice. So my concern is that if we want to improve the rulemaking process in that case, then we do want to, what I hate to do is not have something like this move forward at all. So I guess my preference would be to continue moving it forward, continue to improve the language, and then make sure that it can work as things go forward. We certainly could lay it over. My concern is just then, I just want to make sure that in fact we do have something that advances from this in the first place.
Representative Franson.
All right. Mr. Chair, would you be willing to lay the tape on the bill on the table today and we can revisit it on Thursday?
Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Franson, my concern with that is just making sure, I know we have a pretty packed agenda for Thursday, and my concern is just keeping things moving forward. Let me just think now, because if it goes to government operations, Madam Chair, Representative Franson, it has to be out of government operations next week. Well, my concern is even sending it out Thursday, then it gets a floor hearing on Monday, and then hopefully government operations can fit us in one of the days next week because it has to move by the 15th. So my concern would be just it would end up being laid over into a division report regardless. And so I guess my concern is even waiting until Thursday, I get worried when the bill's going to get re-referred someplace else that we can make sure that we get it back in time to get it moving, to actually make progress on this. What we don't want to do is leave the rules as they were written in the 1980s or whenever that was.
Last question. I know we're getting to the last couple minutes, yep. And Representative Hanspin also has a question.
Well, Mr. Chair, I would say that if it's been 20-some years, that a couple more days really isn't that big of a deal, and we probably should be listening more to the industry that is affected by this legislation than trying to rush along and having unintended consequences, or maybe intended consequences by the department.
Response? Otherwise, we have Representative Heintzman.
No, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, Representative Pinto, I think I hear you heard on this. I really think that you're trying to work on this problem, and I feel bad that you're getting some criticism here.
Nope.
But I think we also heard from House Research that this issue of having to be referred to another committee is directly because of this expedited rulemaking, and we're hearing from testimony today that part of this process is a huge concern. So if that is taken out in an amendment on Thursday, you can lay it over. Am I hearing wrong?
Madam.
Would you consider, am I understanding you to ask for perhaps an oral amendment now?
Well, and Madam,
if it was something you wanted to consider,
would that be something the author would consider? Because I would make that.
And Madam Chair, Representative Heisman, well, I'm not sure that we even need to, in the sense that if we don't move it on to GovOps and that it is included in our division report, we could always just omit that. Here's the thing, right? It's true that we wouldn't have to order expedited rulemaking, right. But part of the point is, I do think we don't want the rules to be left as they were several decades ago. But I suppose so. In any case. I'm fine with, you know, so it's fine. We can lay it over. And if, I guess my concern is just though, if we want to provide direction to the department regarding rulemaking, it sounds like that might have to travel through GovOps. And I suspect that that's what we collectively may want to do based on the things I'm hearing. But, if there's concern from the minority on that, I can certainly imagine, going forward on that.
So we're in the last couple minutes, and it is the author of the bill is before us right now, and I think we'll have the last word on the best way forward. But Representative Heintzman, a final question.
Well, I guess thank you, Madam Chair. I'm confused. I can't tell what you're, Mr. Chair.
He's thinking.
If you're saying we can go ahead and we can fix this right now, and it can be. Laid over, or are we going to have to go through a whole other process and then it goes to government operations? What are you saying?
Madam
Representative
Chair.
Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Heintzman. Actually, neither of those, Representative Heintzman. So what I think I'd like to do is to instead make the motion that the bill be laid over for possible inclusion in division report. We'll leave it at that. We can address that's an opportunity then hear the concerns, address the language, and then and not send it to government operations. At this point, we can certainly consider that if it needs to, then we'll see if we may have to move it on. My thought coming in was that was what was going to happen, and so we'll just go back to that original plan. And so thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members and members of the public, for your input on this.
Okay. Well, I considered that a little. Thank you, Chair Pinto. House File 1801, as amended, is laid over for possible inclusion in the division report. Yes. And thank you.
Well, we're going to have so members, we will be hearing some additional licensing bills, and so I think we'll have to move our final bill to that discussion then, because I know that there's a number of other committees folks have to get to. So House File 1685, we will need to move to another time. I just briefly want to reference some scheduling issues, and thank you so much to members who are able to join us on Friday. That was a really powerful hearing in St. Cloud. I'm seeing some nodding from folks. We will be hearing some additional licensing bills, as I say. I'm hoping to do that next week, but we'll maybe the following week. On Thursday, we'll be hearing House File 1, and we'll be focusing on Article 3 of that bill. The other portions either will have been heard or will be being heard at other times in the committee. There will be an amended version of that bill. It should be posted pretty soon. And then just want to reference to members that our schedule is going to start getting very, very tight, and there's members of the public as well. I think especially that the week of the 18th, we'll try to hold off a little bit this week and next, recognizing that some of the pure policy committees are really pushing hard through bills day and night. So members should expect the week of the 18th could get pretty heavy. I suspect we may have to add one or two more days for hearings or in the evenings, et cetera. We'll certainly try to avoid that as best that we can as we push to get our division reports out and keep the budget process moving. With that, members, we are adjourned. Thanks so much.